Well, let's move directly to our landscape here and directly to Great Salt Lake. And the lake and its surroundings have been described as surreal and severe, and some people find great beauty in them, other people it could be terrifying. And it seems to me that that's the core of the way it's inspired artists. And so if you maybe talk a little bit about how that landscape has impacted the work that's done here, and then I do want to then get into some of the specific projects that you mm-hmm. and the center have done around the lake, including the more recent land scan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's the lake itself, as well as the salt flats. I mean, one of the big reasons we're here is because of the, you know, quote unquote emptiness, which is, in a sense, at its apogee in the Bonneville Flats. Mm-hmm. You know, that white, just solid piece of ground, which is nothing on it. Some people have talked about the idea of kind of an urban way of viewing and a desert way of viewing. In an urban environment, you reduce your experience in order to focus on crossing the street or whatever it is that you're doing. There's too much noise around you to focus, to be able to perceive everything going on around you, so it's a reductive experience. You cut things out in order to see, right? Conversely, and if you're in a more empty environment, at least according to what you're accustomed to experiencing, you are looking, searching for things to add to your experiential realm, to draw things in. It's a searching mode. It's additive. And that reaches its highest form in the Bonneville Salt Flats, where the ground itself is just static and just a single sheet of white space. And so you stand there and you everything that you can see you draw into your experiential frame to try and kind of get balanced and oriented and to to construct some kind of perceptual stability. So it's at the other end of this reductive urban experience. It's an additive, constructive, non-anti-urban in a way of seeing. So things that you see have more value, because and you also see them better because there's the things that aren't in the way. And part of the byproduct of this is that the things that go on the Bonneville Salt Flats look really good.
Right. As because, all the advertising agencies in America
yeah.
exploit.
Yeah. And it's very much the same sort of phenomenology as a museum experience in a way, you know, where you've got a white wall and you put, you know, very selective things on there and they get all the attention because there's less around it. So all of your attention and interest in the valuation of the object is at hand, that's visible, is enhanced. So you can put a car on the Bonneville Salt Flats and it looks really good. We've experimented with ugly things, you know, out there, and they all look good, like a half-eaten burrito on the salt flats. You know? It's like, hey, yeah, it's still really, you know, it's all about, you know, that sort of reduction of static. But it's obviously, it's a perceived emptiness, but it extends beyond the flats and into the region, and the Great Salt Lake is another kind of empty mm-hmm. shell, in a sense that there aren't a lot of people living around the shores of the Great Salt Lake. It's a hard place to be on the shore. The shore, you know, comes and goes. It's a very gradual slope in many cases. It's remote, hard to get to. So that's another, you know, resource that we've got a few projects we're working on now more directly related to the lake itself, but the whole sort of region of the Great Salt Lake Desert has been part of our arena for a while, but less so, you know, geographical or geological landscape, more the result of this mm-hmm. kind of geomorphological phenomenon that has attracted the industries and the activities that like emptiness. Again, quote unquote, you know, the things such as nuclear waste storage and burning chemical waste and testing rockets and what have you, or just, you know, driving as fast as you can in no particular direction. Yeah. The things that we need as a society, but often don't want to acknowledge that we need, or and don't want to have in the backyards of our cities, and so things migrate further and further. I mean, the company Clean Harbors that's working out here, it owns all the waste sites now, mm-hmm. comes from Boston, you know. Got its name because it cleaned up Boston Harbor, but it's now the nation's largest, you know, hazardous waste company, and operates on a national scale, bringing those urban byproducts to the desert, to this away space. And there's a lot of things working on a national scale, migrating towards this particular, you know, Great Salt Lake Desert area. That's, you know, even though it's not quite accurate to call the Great Salt Lake a puddle in the bottom of the Great Basin, it sort of is in a way. And this Great Basin has been, as you well know, sort of historically a place, because it doesn't drain to the rest of the country in a way, it's become a basin that you can dump things in,
mm-hmm.
Kind of, you know, a waste basin for some things. And that's not its primary use, but that's one effect of its remoteness and its, at least perceived, you know, kind of lack of population or whatever the politics that enable this to occur. So that those things are important to evaluate in order for us collectively, all of us, to understand and evaluate the cost benefits of our various lifestyles. And so we need to look at these away spaces and to spend time in them. That's really a major part of why we're here too.
Okay.